Well, it's great to see you all this morning. Thank you all for being here. Every single one is important. And we are making a study of the lives of the 12 apostles. And we're continuing that this morning. And we all have heard of the 12 apostles, and probably most of us know the names of the 12 apostles and learned those in Bible classes as we were growing up, but don't know a lot about the individual men. And as we look deeper into the text of the New Testament, we do find enough information about the different men to form a picture of who they were and get to know them better. And I think it's helpful to do that, that we need to know more about the apostles. They are important men. And the Bible says that in the book of Acts, that they, early church, they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine. And these 12 men then were chosen by Jesus. They were ordinary men, and Jesus was very patient with them. They were like us. They had a lot of quirks about them, good things, not so good things, and yet Jesus saw in them that here were these men who were some of his first followers. They heard the Lord and they followed him, and they were sincere about that. And Jesus spent 18 months at least of his last part of his life daily working very intensely with these men and helping them to grow. And sort of like some of the football movies or sports movies, basketball maybe, that we have seen over the years, of how the coach, great coach, would take a group of players, and at the beginning of the season, they're just very rough around the edges, and they make a lot of mistakes, and they don't look like a winning team at all. And he patiently works them and trains them and encourages them, and they go on to win the championship. And that's a lot the way it is with Jesus, working with the 12 apostles patiently and loving them. Jesus loved these men. And it says that John chapter 13, the night before he was betrayed, that Jesus looked around the room and it says he loved these men that had spent these times with him. And so they're worth looking at and getting to know them. Now, in Luke 17 and verse 33, Jesus made a puzzling statement there for us to think about. And he said, whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. That's a very mysterious saying when you read that, and enigmatic. What does it mean? What is Jesus trying to say there to us? And how do you apply that in your life? You know, what do you do with that statement like this? Well, we want to talk about a man, one of the apostles this morning, that I have no doubt in my mind that this statement was one that he pondered, and he did apply this verse, this saying, in his life. And he is a man that we need to know better. And I'm talking about James, the brother of John, whom we perhaps know even better, but the sons of Zebedee. Sons of Zebedee. They are among the first ones that Jesus met by the Sea of Galilee, and fishermen. And they're often put together that way. Whenever we find them in the gospel accounts, that it is always James and John. James and John, the sons of Zebedee. James and John, his brother. They're always together and very close, and very close to Jesus. So in Mark chapter 10, we find that they came to Jesus and It says here that then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." Now, think about that statement for a moment. Whatever we ask. And if some of you men, some of you husbands, if your wife came to you and asked that question to you, I think most of you would be very reluctant to just give the okay. Because a request like that, "I want you to do whatever I ask." And so it's got to be big. It's got to be something big to ask a question like that. So Jesus asked them, he said, "Well, what do you want me to do for you?" And they said, "Grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory." And I think it would have been interesting if Jesus had just stopped right there and he said, "Well, which one of you is going to be on the right hand and which one of you is going to be on the left hand?" Because that would have set off a big argument there. And Jesus could have walked away and he says, "Well, look, why don't you get back to me when you settle that between the two of you?" Because one of them would probably say, "Well, I'm the older one." And the other one would say, "Well, I'm the smarter one." And they would have sat there and gone back and forth. And but Jesus asked them that question. And they tell him that they want to sit on the right hand and the left. He said, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." I don't think they understood what Jesus was saying to them in making that statement. "Are you able to drink the cup that I drink?" "Well, sure. You know, what are we going to do? Sit down and have a meal together and you're going to pass the cup around? We can do that. That's no problem. And to be baptized with the baptism, well, that's the baptism of John. Sure, we can be baptized with that." But they didn't understand the full implications, probably what Jesus was saying at the time when they responded this way. And Jesus came back and he said, "You will indeed drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. You will be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared." Now at this point, the other ten began to be indignant with the two, and they were complaining about that. So Jesus took them aside at that point in verse 42, and he said, "You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." Well, Jesus was explaining to all of them, and explaining to John and James in particular, why they could not just be given those positions in the kingdom and the glory of the Lord as they were asking. And that in the very nature of the kingdom of God, that it is so radically different than what we customarily find in the world, that the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, is not about seeking glory. It is not about seeking power and honor and prestige in that way. It is about serving. It is about laying down your life. And even the Son of Man, even Jesus, that is what he came to be. And so He is setting the pace. He is setting the lead. And we come away from that passage wondering, did they ever get their wish? Whatever happened with that request that James and John made there of Jesus? Well, we know that John, that he was probably the last living apostle to remain on the earth before he died, because he lived to a very old age and wrote the book of Revelation. In the latter part of John's life, we find that he moved to Ephesus and lived his life there, apparently, and he was exiled on the island of Patmos and wrote the book of Revelation toward the end of his life. So we know quite a bit about John, but what about James? What do we know about James? Because most of us don't know very much about James, the brother of John. He did not write any letters of the New Testament. John wrote five letters of the New Testament, five important books. And yet James did not write any letters. We do not have any standalone statements of James in the New Testament where it's just James speaking. This one that we just looked at is one of the only two passages that I have been able to find where we find the two of them saying something together, which includes James, where they made this statement, "We want to sit on the right and the left hand," and one other time, is the only two places where you can find where James is actually knowing what his words were. So he is not as well known as his brother in that sense. But what we do know about him, what we do know about James, is he is the first of the 12 apostles after Jesus to die. We do know that about him. He was the first apostle who died. And he is one of only two apostles. And I don't know if you're aware of this, that there are only two apostles in the New Testament whose deaths are recorded. And it's James, and the other is Judas. And they're both violent deaths. And Judas's death was by his own hands because of what he had done to Jesus. But James's death is because of what he has done for Jesus when it comes time for him to die. He is the first one of the apostles after Jesus, you see, to give his life. And I'm not including Judas because he went out and hanged himself right away after that. But when we get over into the book of Acts, James is the first of those apostles who died. So we do know that about him. But let's study some things about James this morning and try to get to know him a little bit better. Things that you may not know about him that may not be clear in your mind, so that we can form some understanding of who this man was, James, the son of Zebedee. Now, one thing that is, we look at those lists of the apostles. Notice how high up in the list he is each time. Because you have Peter, Andrew, James, and John. But sometimes in that list, you actually find Peter, James, and John, and Andrew. But in any of the four lists, we have four lists of the apostles that are given in the New Testament. We have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then in Acts chapter 1. Those are the four lists. And in two of those, in Matthew and in Luke, you have Peter, Andrew, James, and John, the two sets of brothers in that order. But in Mark and in Acts, the order is changed, and you have Peter, James, and John, and then Andrew in that order. But when you think about that, never in any of the four lists of the apostles does James come lower than third. He is twice listed second, right next to Peter, and then in the other two, he's listed third, And so that's high up in the list. If there's any importance to the order of the apostles, and we know that Peter was the most important one. He's in the first one in all four of the accounts. So if there's any validity to the order that they are found as far as how close they were to Jesus, how important they were, then you've got to look and say James was one of the more important apostles, certainly, based on that, how he appears in those lists that are there. Now, he was one of the inner circle of three that was with Jesus several times where they, and they alone, went with Jesus on certain things that Jesus was doing, performing miracles, like raising the daughter of Jairus, going up on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus, and going deeper into the Garden of Gethsemane, praying the night that Jesus was there praying in the Garden of Gethsemane before his death. We find several times like that that there seemed to be an inner circle of Peter, James, and John. Not Andrew. Andrew was not in that group. Now there is a couple of times where it mentions the four of them. Like one of those is where they are asking Jesus the question on the Mount of Olives, and they are saying, Lord, tell us about when the end will be. And that was Peter, Andrew, James, and John were asking that question to Jesus. But there is something to be said of the fact that here were these three that were very close to the Lord. And they would go and Jesus would invite them and they would do certain things with him alone. And that was Peter, James, and John. Now we know a lot about Peter and we know a lot about John, but we don't know very much about James. And yet he was there with them on those occasions. And that says something about him. As I mentioned before, that whenever you find James, whenever you see James mentioned in the four Gospels, his brother is always there with him. And it will usually say Peter, or it will say James, and John, his brother, James and John, the sons of Zebedee. And James is always, nearly always, the first one mentioned in that. In fact, in the way that it is worded in the list of the apostles in Mark chapter 3, it says, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James. And then it goes into Andrew and the others. It seems to imply from that, in other words, that James was the older brother of James, of John, and that the son of Zebedee, that he was trusted by his father. They grew up in the fishing business there with their father. So, but every time you find him mentioned there, he's always with his brother John, and he's somewhat of a leader. He's there in the inner circle with the with Jesus, going on some of those special things that they did together. And yet, he never reached the potential that Peter, for example, or some of the other apostles. And the reason is because he died. He died there at that point in the book of Acts. And so his life came to a short stop when he is put to death there in the book of Acts. But whenever we look at his life up to that point, we see that he was very important. He was very pivotal, one of the apostles, and was very close to Jesus throughout that period of time where we read about him. Now let's look at this account of his death. In Acts chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, we find the account of the death of James. And there's some things there that I think are suggestive of that we need to give some thought. It says, now about that time, Herod the king stretched out his hand to harass some from the church. Then he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to seize Peter also. Now think about this, that here you have Herod, who is wanting to harass the church. He is wanting to inflict some harm on the church. He is wanting to stop the movement of the church if he can in any way. So what does he do? He takes James and he has him put to death. And he gauges what is the reaction of the people to this. And he can see, he can sense that, well, the Jews are pleased with that. And so he then goes and seizes Peter and puts him in prison. And he was planning to put him to death during the time of the Passover, it tells us. But as we think about that, we think about Herod's plan, Herod's intention here, going up to this far with what he was intending to carry out, who would he have chosen? We know the kind of man Herod was and what his objective here was. So, which one of the apostles would he select? Which one was he going after? And I would suggest to you that he would have wanted to get one of the leaders. He would have wanted one of the most important ones among the apostles. He would not have gone out after a nobody. He would have wanted to get one of the big names. And so he chose James. And what does that say about James? I believe it indicates his importance. That James may have been one of the more important apostles than we realize. Because from Acts chapter 1 through Acts chapter 12, you find that when Herod goes out looking, who should he arrest? Who should he inflict some harm through the apostles? How can he best get to them? He goes after James. And it's only after he has put him to death that he then decides to lay his hands on Peter. I think that's very significant as you wonder about, well, how important of a man was James among the apostles? He must have been more important than we realize. And what was he doing during those 12 chapters of the book of Acts? Well, we don't have any of his sermons. We don't have him performing any miracles by himself. We don't have any of his recorded words. And yet he is there, and Herod sees his importance. That he is one of the key leaders among the apostles, and he goes out and has him put to death. So, I would suggest that it is possible, it's very possible in my mind, that up through Acts chapter 1 through 12, James may have been one of the unsung heroes among the apostles, that one of the most underrated of them that there were up to this point. And that if there was a rival of the greatness or the importance of Peter, it was probably James. Up to that point in his life, where his life suddenly came to a sudden end. And what was he doing in there? He was serving, just like Jesus said, that in the kingdom of God is what we will do. He was following that teaching that we are about serving. We are about being a servant. The Son of Man came to be a servant and to give his life, to be giving for others. That's the kind of thing James was doing that we see in his life. But what kind of man was he? What was he like to be around James and get to know him? Well, there are some things that we are able to see. And for one, that he was from a good family. No question about it. He was from a very prominent family because it is very clear that he and John, they were the sons of Zebedee, and their father owned a fishing business on the Sea of Galilee. In fact, it says in Mark chapter 1 and verse 20 that they had hired servants. That indicates that this was a thriving business that they had, very successful business of Palestine for that day, and that his mother's name was Salome. And the way that we find that information is that when Jesus was being crucified and at his tomb, there were some of the women who came. And by comparing the different accounts of the names of those women, we come to the conclusion that the mother of James and John was one of those women. And that in one of the accounts that is given, as a matter of fact, in Mark chapter 15 and verse 40, it states that one of the women was the mother of James and John. It does not give her name. But in the Matthew account, in Matthew 27 and verse 56, when it is giving the list of those same women, it does not say the mother of James and John. It says Salome. He gives the woman's name as Salome. And another interesting thing that makes you wonder about her is when in John 19 and verse 25, they were standing by the cross, the women, and it's Mary, the mother of Jesus. And standing next to her was the sister of Mary. States that there in John 19 and 25. What makes you wonder, was Salome possibly the sister of the mother of Jesus? In which case, that would mean that James and John were actually his cousins. Now, we can't really know that for sure, but obviously the mother of James and John was very much part of following Jesus herself, that she was standing by the cross. Or at least, at very least, she was among the ladies that went out to the tomb for the resurrection of Jesus. So he is from a godly family, an important family. In John 18, it says that when John was standing outside the high priest when they had arrested Jesus, that it says that his mother was related to the high priest. That statement is made that they were somehow related to the high priest who was responsible there for the arrest of Jesus. And they were standing outside the house of the high priest where Jesus was inside. So we do know some of those things about it. But what about the personality of James? And again, what we see, one of the examples where we can see that is in Luke 9, 53 and 54. And again, we find the two brothers together in this account. But in Luke 9, verse 53 and 54, it said that Jesus was setting out, going through Samaria, on his way to Jerusalem. And, of course, many times they would bypass Samaria to make that journey. But Jesus was going directly through Samaria. But it says that the people of that city, the Samaritans, they would not receive him, meaning Jesus. And it's not clear what that means. If they started coming into town and they met them out there by the edge of the town, and said, look, you're not welcome here. You are your leader, your master here. He is pointed. He's going to Jerusalem. He's not welcome here. Or if they just were not hospitable to them. But anyway, it says they went on to the next town after this. But in verse 54, it says, when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them just as Elijah did? Now think about that statement. that here is Jesus on his way to Jerusalem to die for the people of the world, to give his life as a ransom. And they do not receive Jesus here. They do not welcome him. And they say, Lord, do you want us to call down fire from heaven? You want us to just kill them all right here? We'll just wipe this village out. We'll teach them a lesson that they will not do this again. You know, when the other villages of the Samaritans, when they see this, when they will know better than to ever try that again with you. So that was their reaction. They're thinking about Elijah. Now there was an account of Elijah where Elijah does this. He called down fire from heaven. It was the account where after the death of Ahab, Ahab's son became the king of the northern kingdom of Israel. His name was Ahaziah. And it says that he was in the upper chamber of his palace and he fell down through the lattice. Now, a lattice is a little flimsy railing type thing, you know, that you will see those that are kind of like a mesh, but it's not strong enough to lean on. And anyway, it says that he fell down off of there and he was seriously injured. Ahaziah, and he was lying in bed near death, and he sent his messengers to go up north to the god of Ekron, Beelzebub. And they are on the way going up there to Beelzebub to see if this god can heal, save the life of Ahaziah, basically. And at that point, Elijah steps out in front of them and he says, is the reason you are going up here to this other god because there is no god in Israel? Is that what's happening? And they didn't know what to do about that. And so they went back and reported that to Ahaziah. And they said, this crazy guy came out of the woods up there and told us this. And he said, well, what did he look like? They described him. He said, that's Elijah. So Ahaziah, he sent 50 of his soldiers up there to arrest Elijah. And they come up there, and Elijah was sitting up on the edge of the hill, it says. And they said, O man of God, we have come to arrest you. And Elijah was not fazed in the least. He looks back at him and he says, well, if I'm the man of God, let fire come down from heaven and consume all of you. And it did. And Ahaziah heard about that, and so he sent 50 more. And they came up there and said, man of God, we have come to arrest you. Said, if I'm the man of God, then let fire come down out of heaven and consume you. And it consumed them. And Ahaziah didn't get it. He sent 50 more. But this time, his commander was wise enough that when he came down there, he got down on the ground in front of Elijah and he said, man of God, please don't destroy this 50 soldiers. We understand. We get the point. But would you please come with us? And so Elijah at that point went with them. But that was the account that James and John were referring to, because that happened in this vicinity of Samaria. They said, Lord, do you want us to call down fire on these people like Elijah did? Jesus looked at them and he rebuked them in verse 55. And he said, you do not know what manner of spirit you are of. He said, look, that is brutal. That is harsh. That's uncalled for. That's not what we're about. We are here in serving. We are not here to destroy lives. The Son of Man has come to save lives, not to destroy lives. So he rebukes James and John there for that remark that they made. And they end up going on then to the next village. But we see then a glimpse of the personality of James in that. And he is a fiery personality, to say the least. You know, that's what we can discern from that, is his personality is he is on a short fuse. If anyone says the wrong thing about Jesus or anyone threatens Jesus, he is going to speak up and defend Jesus. That is what we know about James. Now, it may have been because of that in Mark 3 and verse 17, it says that Jesus gave a nickname to James and John, Boanerges. Now, what does that mean? It means the sons of thunder. It's almost like they had their own motorcycle gang, the two of them. And they, would have those leather jackets on, and on the back, that's what it would say, the sons of thunder. And, they had a reputation then for Jesus to give them that nickname. The fiery temperament that they have, those two brothers, to be quick on the draw to defend Jesus. They are not going to suffer the reputation, the honor of Jesus is not going to be, because that's what they did. The Samaritans that came out there and they said, we would not receive him, speaking of Jesus. And that's when they spoke up that way. So when we look at James, what do we see in his personality? We see, first of all, that he is very zealous for the Lord. Very zealous for the Lord. And that zeal that he had was, he learned that from Jesus. He witnessed that in Jesus. One of the first times that Jesus came to Jerusalem, in John chapter 2, and verse 17, Jesus went into the temple and he overturned the tables of the money changers. In John chapter 2 and verse 17. And it says, then his disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house has consumed me. Zeal for your house has eaten me up. That was quoting from a psalm in the Old Testament. But that zeal, we see that zeal being lived out in James and John. Where did they get that? Well, they saw that in Jesus. Jesus had that zeal for the Lord. He turned those temples over. He says, take these things, get them out of here. Do not make my Father's house a house of merchandise. Zeal for the Lord has consumed me. So James had that burning zeal. And the disciples remembered that statement, it says, after that. So he was on fire for the Lord. And when he died in Acts chapter 12, that might have been a fitting epitaph to the life of James to put that statement up there on the tombstone. Zeal for your house has consumed me. You know, that's not a bad thing to have that as the reason why you died was because of your zeal for the Lord. And it was true of James, just like it was true of Jesus, that characteristic. And second, he was ambitious. We see that in that request where they came to Jesus that first time. They said, we want to sit on the right hand and on the left in your glory. Very ambitious. And ambition, sometimes it can be a bad thing if it is in a selfish way of power and personal fame. And like Hitler, he was very ambitious, not in a good way. But sometimes ambition is in a good sense. Like for Abraham Lincoln, for example, he lost many elections. But he was very determined and he continued to run. And he then eventually won the presidency. And Thomas Edison was so determined to find the how to build the light bulb, he eventually succeeded in that. So it's not necessarily a bad thing to have ambition, and we see that in James in a good sense for the cause of Christ. Very ambitious for the cause of Christ. We want to be at the right hand and the left hand in your glory. Are you able to drink the cup? Jesus asked them that question. So James is ready to serve. He is ready to die if necessary. That was the question, Jesus. And later as he thought about those things, I'm sure it became clear what Jesus was saying, especially after his death on the cross, that all the apostles must have come to the understanding of what Jesus was saying. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink? Are you able to be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? The baptism of death, the baptism of suffering. And they say, yes, we are able. And they stood by that statement, both James and John. I mean, they were able. They were ready to do that. And he said, you will drink the cup. And of course, he went on to explain to them again. He said, we're not like the Gentiles. Gentiles, they are all about the power. They want the position. They want the honor. We're not like that. We are about serving. We are like the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. James got the point. James got the message. When the time came, he answered the call and he laid down his life for the Lord there in Acts chapter 12. We can argue then that James was one of the greatest servants of the apostles that he had up to that time when he died. His life was cut short. Sometimes the good do die young. Some of the things that we learn from James is that following Jesus, it means great sacrifice. Are you willing to drink the cup? That's a question for all of us. And sometimes the greatest may not be the most visible. Sometimes there are those who are not in the limelight, so to speak, as Paul explains there in talking about the body of Christ, that sometimes it's the members of the body that are not honorable, the most honor. We do not always give the most honor. The ones that are most important, in other words. James was like that. He was quietly going about serving. And yet, on the day of Pentecost, he's up there. It says all the one of the... Peter stood up with the 11 and began preaching and speaking in the other languages like they were doing. And they, by the hands of the apostles, many miracles were done. And they brought the goods and laid them at the feet of the apostles. And they distributed them. And so James was right there involved in the work with the other apostles. He was one of the leaders. He was one of the most important ones. And then when Herod wanted to inflict the church with the greatest harm, the damage, who did he get? He picked James. He knew which one he needed to arrest. And James knew who to die for when the time came. And that statement that Jesus made, whoever seeks to save his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life will preserve it. Sometimes it says, whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. James understood that. And that's what he was willing, that's what he was about. That's what his life was all about. So, if you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, we hope that you would look at these men. Realize that they're just like you. They're men just like you. And They heard Jesus. They followed Him. They saw in Him the one that they were looking for, the one worth serving, the one worth dying for. And so today we have that choice. Come to Jesus, commit to Him, follow Him, even to die for Him if it becomes, but to serve Him like the Son of Man. That's what the kingdom of God is really about. If you're here, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.